So in the pilot episode of the TV show The Marvelous Miss Maisel, Midget repeatedly yells over and over again outside the 1950s butcher shop, "We got the rabbi! We got the rabbi! We got the rabbi!" And now you might be wondering, why is she exclaiming, "We got the rabbi?" Well, Midge is excited because the rabbi is coming to break his fast after Yom Kippur, which is a big feast celebration in the synagogue. And it's a good sign to have the rabbi come over for dinner. It means that Midgey and her fiancé will likely get the wedding date that they want. And for the family, it's just not an honor to have such an extraordinary guest come and have dinner with you, but it's what this guest is able to give them in return for their hospitality. So would the rabbi coming over for dinner be such a big deal if Midgey and her fiancé weren't able to get the date for their wedding? Would she have gone through such great lengths to make sure she got the right cut of lamb that the rabbi likes if she didn't need to secure the rabbi's favor? This morning, we find Jesus at a dinner party of a prominent Pharisee. And before Jesus even sits down at the table, we are already told that Jesus is being watched carefully by the Pharisees. And I imagine Jesus is watching the Pharisees closely as well. And Jesus has compassion on a man because the man is ill. His body is all swollen. And so Jesus is teaching the Pharisees again about having compassion on the Sabbath. And then, as Jesus often does when he's at a meal, he never misses an opportunity to teach. So after healing the man with swelling, Jesus gives us some wisdom from the table. And so this morning, we're going to just look at the first part of this wisdom. We're going to look at verses 7 to 14, where in this section, Jesus first has us consider what it means to be humble. And then he asks us to consider what genuine hospitality looks like. So Jesus turns our attention to the problem of pride and the importance of genuine humility and generosity. These first couple of verses 7 through 11, recall the image from the book of Proverbs, chapter 25. And Proverbs 25, verses 6 and 7a says, "Do not exalt yourselves in the king's presence, and do not claim a place among great men. It is better for him to say to you, 'Come up here,' than for him to humiliate you before a nobleman." So Jesus is observing how the guests are interacting with each other. And he picks up that each one is going to the place of honor for himself. You see, in first century Judaism, when it came time to eat, the table was more of a U shape. And the place of honor was always at the bottom of the U, where the host or the master sat in the middle, and then guests sat to the left or to the right. Those were the places of honor. And it was often the case that the most honored guests were the last ones to arrive. And so Jesus is watching that all the guests are choosing for themselves not to wait to be invited to the place of honor, but to choose for themselves those seats. And so this observation is what prompts Jesus to tell this very first parable. Jesus says to them, "When someone invites you to a wedding feast, do not take the place of honor, for a person more distinguished than you may have been invited. If so, the host who invited both of you will come and say to you, 'Give this person your seat.' Then, humiliated, you will have to take the least important place." In this brief parable, Jesus is saying Don't exalt yourself by taking that place of honor. Or another way of thinking about it is, don't be prideful. And we're all aware, hopefully, that pride is as old as time itself. In fact, the late St. Augustine, one of the early medieval church fathers, viewed pride as the root of all evil, or the beginning of all evil. And indeed, there was pride in the fall of Adam and Eve, but Adam and Eve also embraced doubt and unbelief in God. And so, when Adam and Eve gave in to the lies of Satan, they were doing their best to erase the whole glory of God. In fact, Calvin in his Institutes on Christian Religion in Book 1, Chapter 1, Section 1, writes, "So long as we do not look beyond the earth, we are quite pleased with our own righteousness, wisdom, and virtue. We address ourselves in the most flattering terms and seem only less than demigods." Calvin's point here is that when we fail to acknowledge God, we're going to seek those seats of honor. We're always going to see ourselves in the best light. In fact, the book of Proverbs describes pride coming before destruction, right? We quote it as pride comes before the fall in Proverbs 16. And pride is going to have a regrettable end. It's going to bring the person low, as Proverbs 29 verse 23 points out. But pride also places us in an undesirable position before God, as James reminds us in chapter 4. So Jesus observes that these guests are taking the best place of honor, that they're exhibiting a spirit of pride. And so Jesus continues then by saying, "For a person more distinguished than you may have been invited. If so, the host who invited both of you will come and say to you, 'Give this person your seat.' Then, humiliated, you will have to take the least important place. In the ancient Near East, shame and honor was a very important part of their culture. It became part of one's identity, one's worth, one's character. And so Jesus is describing this reversal of embarrassment. A self-appointed place at the seat of honor is going to produce shame. Self-appointed place at the seat of honor is going to produce shame. And so this move comes with a sense of shame because you assume more honor than that's given credit or acknowledged. Another way of thinking about this is Jesus says, don't overestimate your importance. And so this leads him into what to do. What is the antidote? And so Jesus then goes on and says, but when you are invited, take the lowest place, so that when your hosts come, he will say to you, 'Friend, move up to a better place.' Then you will be honored in the presence of all the guests." So Jesus is saying that if you're a wise person, you're going to take the place, the last seat, rather than the first. And then when you are given that place of honor, you will receive honor instead of shame. It's better for others to recognize you or recognize who you are than to suggest to them that you're proper or improper place. Humility is the best course in all affairs, notes theologian Daryl Brock. So humility is the place where you want to be. And those who humble themselves will be exalted, and those who exalt themselves will be humbled, Jesus says in verse 11. The humble will be lifted up. The proud will be brought down. And so God gives humility. That is his gift. And through his blessing and divine acceptance to no, though he owes his divine acceptance to nobody, he gives us divine favor to all. Paul, in that famous Philippians hymn in chapter 2, verses 5 through 7, right? Where Paul talks about how Jesus humbled himself, taking on the very nature of a cross. We use that in our prayer of confession, or our words of assurance this morning. Right? Paul shows to us how Jesus is that greatest example of humility, of truth. So God is the one that is doing the assessment and the exalting and the lifting and the humbling. But developing that humble spirit and living into that humble spirit is difficult, isn't it, friends? Why is it difficult to develop a humble spirit and live into the humble spirit? Well, it's because we're inclined, first off, to stroke our own egos, our own affirmation. We seek our own affirmation. We want the honored role. We want to seek those places of honor, those seats of honor. We want the praise and adoration of others. And humility goes against that desire. Humility asks us to voluntarily move down a couple of seats, per se. Humility allows others to give us credit for our work or to pay attention to those who may not be able to give it back. And so, friends, let us take a moment and ask ourselves, are we seeking attention? Do we act selectively only to those who can repay us with kindness or status? Do we give attention to those who will stroke our egos, our praises, and adoration? And now, Jesus turns the lens to another problem. He turns the lens to the guest of the party. And he turns the lens away from generosity and humility towards hospitality, towards people who can't return the favor. So Jesus says to the host, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers or your relatives, or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and so you will be repaid. Behind this do not invite command is the sense that this is something that has been a habit for this particular host, that he is in the custom of inviting his friends, his wealthy neighbors, his relatives, that he's been doing this exclusively. And so many would think, well, that's great. That's showing and inviting those who can repay you back is good and righteous and pray and brings praise and honor and is worthy of it. But Jesus here is getting to the opposite. This customary paid back hospitality is of no great merit to God. Jesus is saying, your hospitality, your fellowship, shouldn't have social limits. The best hospitality is the hospitality that is given and not exchanged. It also needs to be generous. So Jesus says, when you invite, don't invite people who are going to pay you back, But now Jesus says, continues with who to invite. Jesus continues to say to the host, but when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind. These are the folks who are in need and not able to, these are the folks that are in need and not able to be repaid. They are the lowest of the low. Think for a moment. Who in your life is in need that can't repay you back? How are you extending hospitality to them? Several months ago, I came across an article. I don't know if it was the banner or if it was on the CRC network website. But nonetheless, this article told the story of one of our sister churches in British Columbia that extended unexpected hospitality to somebody who couldn't repay it back. The article goes on to describe how a couple of years ago, this particular church received an unexpected visitor. A young man had met a refugee family new to Canada by the bus stop. And using the gift of Google Translate, this young man discovered that this family had absolutely nothing. And so what does anybody logically do? Google's the next best thing, the nearest church. And it happened that our sister church was the nearest church. And on that unexpected day, when this family came, our sister church responded with generous hospitality, with humility. They jumped right on in and incorporated the family into the church life. And that family is still worshiping with this church to this day. And so, who is God calling you in your life to invite? Who is in your life that can't repay? And how are you extending hospitality to them? This promise comes to us from Jesus at the end. He says, you will be blessed. And though you cannot be repaid, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. Jesus promises that God is going to honor such great hospitality. That God is going to honor such selfless graciousness. We may not see that repayment here and now, but in the end, at the resurrection, God will repay. God is the source of that reward. God is going to commend those of us who reach out to the needy and minister to them. Often in the quiet, often in the background, but true hospitality, true generosity, doesn't look for payback, but rather it is free of charge, graciously given, as an act of obedience to God, out of gratitude for the forgiveness that Christ has extended to us, free of charge, the ultimate source of hospitality and honor. And so, friends, how are we extending hospitality? Are we, like our Pharisee friend, just inviting those who can repay us back? I'll give you this if you give me that. Or are we being true stewards of the gifts God has given to us? And so it's in this passage that Jesus draws our attention, not inward, but outward. Jesus instructs us that we shouldn't be seeking out the seats of honor or asking what we can do to get something back. But rather, instead, we should be asking, how can I help meet the needs of others? The marks of humility and hospitality are signs of obedience to Jesus. And we don't do it because we do it out of gratitude, not out of selfishness. Although it's true, we will still act selfishly at times, but the call to humility and hospitality are those marks of obedience to following Jesus. And so, friends, who again in your life needs to be shown hospitality? And are you humble enough to show that humility or that hospitality? In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.